Are you ready to level up and achieve peak performance? Let Healing Within help assist you to be at the top of your game. Pair massage and assisted practitioner stretching to be one step above your competitors. Go to healingwithinkc.com to book a session.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John. I'm in Kansas City. So is Marco Marquez. Nate Buchetti is in Denver. And Greg Gurley is on the phone. Hello, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, boys.
Nate, you going to say anything from Denver, or are you just going to ignore Greg Gurley?
Good morning, Greg.
What are you doing in Denver?
Just came out here to take in the mountains a little bit, you know. I was calling it a women's MMA event last night, Greg.
Who won?
Nate.
Well, seven different fights. Yeah, the audience
won. I highly doubt that.
I'm not getting in that cage.
I'd give anything to see it. I can tell you that. And let me tell you.
I'm sure you would.
Greg, correct me if I'm wrong. Greg and I would be two of the people in the front row. I could promise you that. If you ever get in that cage.
I would pay whatever it costs to sit courtside at Nate in an MMA fight.
Oh, yeah. It could happen.
It doesn't last very long.
Well, so what? That's what happens in the fight business.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the fight.
So, Greg Gurley, I'd like to talk to you about about the way officials have been calling games. It's been all over the place. You know, like I know we had talked about, the Kansas game against Texas Tech where they're letting them play and then they're not letting them play, and it seems like there's been a change. I was watching the Missouri-Arkansas game that was getting ready to last 3 hours, about 2 hours and 45 minutes. 66 free throw attempts. 56 fouls called, 4 Arkansas Razorbacks fouled out of the game. And I get it. It seems like they're trying to reestablish control of these games, but that was excessive. What do you think, or how do you think, just the way officials have called games so far this year that you've watched, you've been a part of, because it seems like they are tightening things up right now.
Well, let's go back a couple weeks. We played in Lubbock against Texas Tech, and there were 6 fouls called on Texas Tech the entire game. And the whole narrative after that game was one possession where they say Kansas fouled on the last possession and had nothing to do with the rest of the game, I guess. And since that time, we have been involved in so many games like Tuesday night where there was a ton of fouls called. I watched that Arkansas-Missouri game last night, and it was very similar to the Sunflower Showdown, to where every possession, if you drove the ball to the basket, you were going to get a whistle. So it was choppy, took 2.5 hours, ton of free throws. So I don't know if there was an emphasis put on the freedom of movement calling things after what happened in Lubbock 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it sure seems like there was, because they have been called differently. And in our game on Tuesday against K-State, and again, this is not both sides. Every time Jalen Wilson touched the ball and drove the basket, they called a foul. Every time Keontae Johnson or went to the basket, they called a foul. There were some phantom calls. There were some well-deserved calls. And quite frankly, I was shocked that on game point at the end of regulation, they didn't call a foul on Zuby after K-State stole the ball. So they swallowed their whistle at times, but 90% of the time they blew it. So I don't know. I guess the one thing in their favor is that they've called them consistently. They've either not called them on both sides or they've called them on both sides. I don't think there's been a disparity one way or another. I know everyone that's not a Kansas fan thinks that the officials cheat for Kansas. And, you know, we did some deep dive into the stats, and there's been more fouls called on Kansas than their opponents. Their opponents have shot more free throws than Kansas. Kansas has attempted less three-pointers than their opponents, meaning if there's not as many fouls called on Kansas, then that means that they're probably shooting more threes, which isn't even the case. And I'm not saying we got a bad whistle. I'm really not. I thought it was fair on both sides. You look at that box score on Tuesday night. Fouls were identical. Free throws were basically identical. The box score was basically identical. That's how you get a one-point game. But the performance by Kansas, shooting terribly from the three-point line, not shooting well from the free throw line, and you lose by one, that's the major factor in the game more than anything.
Nate Buchady.
Well, to stick on the refs for a second, before we get into the whole game against K-State, there's a lot of griping and complaining when it's a free throw fest and the refs take over. But let's say that like what we're talking about is true, that maybe the refs were given a talking to by the league after the game against Texas Tech, and hey, we need to tighten things up a little bit, or these games are going to be unwatchable because they're going to be so physical, nobody can move. Is it possible that then there's an adjustment and maybe we get less foul calls if they stick with it and the season goes on just because the players adjust? Are you optimistic about that happening at all? And then we have a more free-flowing game, which is what they're trying to get?
I don't know. As you get deeper into the season, games get more physical and referees swallow their whistle come March. So I'd love to say that we'd get a more free-flowing game and guys would play without fouling, but I highly doubt that because, you know, when you get tired is when you know, Jalen Wilson played 45 minutes the other night. It's hard to play every single minute and be the guy on offense and defense and play without fouling. So I find it hard to believe that all of a sudden guys are going to be like, you know what, I'm going to move my feet more. I'm going to put my hands down my back and not grab and claw. I think what will happen is there'll be less fouls called. It'll be just as physical, and it'll be mainly how the refs call the game.
We have Greg Gurley on the line. All right, Greg, there's a lot to talk about with the Sunflower Showdown, but you know, we played comments from Bill Self after the game, and he talked about calling that timeout that everyone was talking about after the game, and said he wishes he hadn't called it. If he didn't call it, they'd probably win the game. Take me back to that sequence because that was certainly a big moment in the game.
Kansas had a one-point lead, had the ball, just kind of dribbling around the three-point line, nothing going on, and Bill likes to have a lot of movement, and the ball doesn't stick. He didn't want a bunch of dribbling, and what happened was Jalen just had the ball at top, just kind of dribbling around, knowing he's going to take a desperation three or a wild running one-hander, and he just saw that there was no flow or no rhythm in that possession and had to make a split decision. Obviously, hindsight being 20-20, if he knew that he was going to make it, he wouldn't have called it. And, you know, I really wish Jalen wouldn't have shot it because the what-ifs in that scenario are great. But he did. He's a big boy. He came in the locker room, and he looked at me, and he's like, ah, should have called that timeout. And it's easy to say because you get the defense an opportunity to set their defense with 5 seconds on the shot clock. You're throwing it in on the sideline as opposed to underneath the basket. And you're like, okay, you're probably going to get the ball with your back to the basket and throw up a tough one. Now, on the flip side, earlier in the game, K-State had a couple possessions where I think one time there was 7 on the clock, another time there was 5, and they got good looks. And that's more on the defense than it is the offense. K-State did a good job on that last possession when they had 5 on the clock. We didn't. I remember the first half, I think there was 3 on the clock, and Desi Sills cut to the basket and got an and one. And that just can't happen. And those are the little things that happen throughout a game that when you have an overtime game, every point matters, obviously. And so, Bill Self's an unbelievable game manager. So that's why at the end of the game, we're all driving home. We're all like, God, can you believe we lost? I mean, we're just talking the whole way because we're so used to winning those games. And that tells you about our track record and Bill's ability to win close games. And it just doesn't happen very often. We're just shocked. And that's a good thing. And it should hurt. And it does. And we got to forget about it and get back after it on Saturday with a quick flip. Great, really good TCU team that lost in West Virginia, which was a bit of a head scratcher. But we know the league is a gauntlet and tough, and you go on the road and anything can happen. They're flying straight to Lawrence and they're going to be mad. And so we got to take care of business on Saturday, celebrate with the Chiefs win on Saturday afternoon, and get on a plane and go to Waco for a game on Monday. So, got to have a short memory in this league.
So, you know, it's funny, Greg, you were talking about how you're so used to just winning games like that when you're at Kansas and Bill Self is the coach. I was talking to our buddy Ruben. I was watching the game without here in Denver. And at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, I was saying, who would you rather have drawing up a play at the end of a game scenario like this than Bill Self, like in the entire country? And so it was pretty stunning to see both those possessions happen and Kansas didn't even get a shot off. And I'm curious what went wrong from the standpoint. I felt like out of all the players fouling out, K.J. Adams was maybe the biggest because that pick and roll when he runs it with DeJuan Harris seems to be such an amazing weapon. And the other two guys just don't run it as often with DeJuan Harris. And so I'm just kind of curious, what do you think went wrong in those situations and how big was that losing K.J. Adams late in the game?
Yeah, the foul trouble was tough because, you know, it put Grady Dick, Kevin, and KJ on the bench, three of our starters. Grady fouled out in overtime, but I'm with you and Ruben. Like, end of game, timeout, Bill Self's got his dry erase board. I'm 100% confident that we're going to get a good look and hopefully get out of there with a win. And to not get a shot on either possession and actually on the regulation give up a steal, they could have got a layup and would have been crazy in that building. Like I thought, we kind of dodged the bullet. Even though Zuby didn't foul him, we've seen a lot less called throughout that game. So ball in DeJuan Harris's hands both times, you don't get a shot, that's on DeJuan, and he'll take the blame for that. He's got to be the quarterback and get it to somebody to shoot or at least get it up on the rim to give yourself a chance to get a prayer that you throw up or get an offensive rebound as you break down the defense. So very surprising, uncharacteristic. What else to say? It just doesn't happen. I guarantee you yesterday, today, and tomorrow, they're going to do a lot of end-of-game scenarios and situational basketball like they do every practice, but it's going to be emphasized this week because of the shortcomings on Tuesday night.
And I guess, you know, part of the shame of it from KU's perspective is as I was watching that game, I felt like we were seeing one of the all-time great Kansas performances by an individual player in Jalen Wilson. It reminded me of the 27-point, I think it was, performance that Devontae Graham had against Oklahoma when he had to guard Buddy Hield the entire game too. I mean, Wilson, it was on offense he was doing everything. On defense, but down the stretch, he started guarding Johnson and doing a great job on both ends of the floor. But it doesn't end up in a win. So I don't know, like, can you still put it up there, Greg? Like, can you still say that's one of the best performances in a KU uniform?
Oh, yeah. I think you can because he was a warrior. And he, like you said, he did everything on both ends of the floor. He was really good defensively, played every minute of the game. And, yeah, it needs to go down as a great performance by a Jayhawk. It's the most points since, I believe, 2013 when Andrew Wiggins had 41 at West Virginia, which also resulted in a loss. And, you know, when you look at a lot of those numbers throughout the years, a lot of times when guys go off for 35, 45 or whatever, it's a lot of times it's been a loss. And I don't know what that says more than, you know, it's not always about one guy. And he had a rough night from Grady. He had a forgettable night by Kevin McCullough. I mean, and he'll tell you the same thing. It was everything that he did. I mean, he had a few positive impacts on the game, but having him foul out was frustrating because you lost a really good defender and then a guy that can steal the ball and impact the game that way. But he had a rough night, and Grady was, you know, back to him, 1 of 8. They just got open looks, too. Can't complain. If you're Kansas, you look at that box score, you go 6 of 29 from three-point line and missed 10 free throws. That's the glaring thing that you got to think about. Because the week before, we won a game from the free throw line against Oklahoma. We shot the ball well at the free throw line, and we were able to beat Oklahoma at home. So it's different on the road. It's much more difficult to with everybody screaming and yelling at you, as opposed to a library quiet environment in Allen Fieldhouse when you're shooting. It's just comfortable. You get your, you know, you just give your little security blanket. But that's why road free throw percentages are much different than home.
All right, Greg, we have at noon on Saturday the tip-off between Kansas and TCU right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Greg, I know that you'll call the game whenever it is, but how pleased are you that the game is at noon and will end in time for you to watch the Chiefs and the Jags on Saturday afternoon?
When they announced that time, I was ecstatic because I was worried they're going to do it on Sunday and we'd be on a plane to Waco and it's just not the same. I'm so happy. I get to call the game, go back to my place, just sit there and be fat and happy, watch my Chiefs and watch my two favorite things in the world, the Jayhawks in person, Chiefs on TV, destroy the Jags. They're a cool story, cute story for last week, but their run ends on Saturday.
That's the kind of confidence I'm looking for. Nate's hemming and hawing. You say it's a cute – that's right, they're a cute story, but now it's over. The story ends on Saturday, says Greg Gurley. That's what I like. Now, what about this story of TCU? Look, they're a very good basketball team, but they've lost 3 of their last 4, including last night they lost at West Virginia 74-65. So what are you expecting from TCU on Saturday at noon?
You know, a couple weeks ago, you and Nate and I were talking about TCU, like, where do they fit? Are they elite? And here they are losing 3 or 4. Still very, very dangerous. They got guys. They got Mike Miles and Baugh and O'Bannon and Lampkin in the middle is an odd guard, a guy to guard. I mean, and he's just kind of a, I don't want to say a strange body, but he's got really thin legs. He's kind of got a big upper body. He's not going to out-athlete you, but he just figures ways out to score, and it'll be interesting to see him and KJ because Lampkin's got size on him. KJ's got the strength and the power and the ability to put it on the floor and go past them. So that'll be a matchup to watch. But they're really good, and this league's really good. That's why they've lost 3 out of 4. But we have proven that we're not blowing people out. It's going to be a close game, even though they couldn't handle West Virginia a couple nights ago. It's a good basketball team, well coached, and we got to be ready because Phil Self's the master at not losing back-to-back games. I should have had that stat. But over his 20 years, it's amazing how many times he's lost multiple back-to-back games. It just doesn't happen very often because he's a great adjuster. And I don't know if you really got to do a lot of adjusting from the loss at K-State to this one. Make the free throw, shoot better from the three-point line, and you're fine. But that's easier said than done. Need another great atmosphere at Allen. You got to defend your home court if you want to win a league title. It was definitely a bump in the road Tuesday night because we really could have separated ourselves, especially after Iowa State keeps winning, but didn't do it. Now got to figure it out, see what kind of grit these guys have, see how Kevin McCullough responds to a forgettable night, see how Grady responds after a forgettable night. So there's a lot of questions to be answered on Saturday.
And look, it's always a tough run schedule-wise, Greg, but out of the next 6 games that Kansas plays, only one of them is not ranked in the top 25. Do you know who that is?
I think it's Kentucky.
Yeah, it's Kentucky. That's the one non-ranked team they have over their next 6 games.
At Rupp, a week from Saturday. I don't want to say it doesn't count, but it's not a league game. it's just one that you can let it all hang out and go. The world will be watching. It's more than likely College Game Day will be there. It is the two all-time winningest programs, and you throw the records out the window, even though Kentucky is, I mean, let's be honest, they're not ranked, but they got guys. They got dudes, and we saw that last year. They got some different dudes this year, but, man, playing at Rupp is always fun. Just being around that atmosphere, just like when Indiana came here, we go to Rupp or whatever. It's just when two blue bloods get together, it brings out the media stars. There's people at that game that aren't normally at our games, and it's just fun. It's big time basketball, and I'm looking forward to another trip to Rupp.
Greg Gurley, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Hi, boys. Talk to you later.
That is Greg Gurley, who will be part of the broadcast crew that has the game on Saturday at noon right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB between Kansas and TCU. Also in college basketball last night for Mizzou, it was a huge win that led Marco to pound his mother's couch repeatedly and make too much noise, where his mom yelled at him during the Mizzou game because Marco was so excited that Isaiah Mosley was playing and scoring and doing things. And it also led me to shout repeatedly in the final seconds of a very close, exciting game that saw Mizzou erase a 10-point deficit. They were down 10, just under 5 minutes left to play. And something else we didn't mention earlier, Noah Carter was their third leading scorer, second leading rebounder. He didn't play. It was announced before the game he didn't play. He wasn't going to play. And so he was out. Isaiah Mosley was in. And look, Mizzou got dominated on the boards. That's going to happen. That's the nature of the beast. That's this team. But they have to make up for it with, you know, taking care of the basketball, assist to turnover ratio, creating turnovers, creating chaos defensively. And boy, did they close the show last night. And more importantly than anything, they hit all their free throws to seal the deal, and they needed all of them. And so Dennis Gates was grabbed by John Sunvold. I don't know if they grabbed him. They probably just said, "Coach Gates, come over." It'd be weird.
Get down here.
It'd be weird if John Sunvold wouldn't, "Come here." But sat down with the broadcast crew, including John Sunvold, to talk about the big win over Arkansas last night.
Coach Gates, we talked to you earlier today. You said to us, this is going to be one of those just grind it out, physical,
absolutely,
rough games. What made you think that was how this game was going to play out?
I just knew both teams were in desperation for a win. They were on a three-game losing streak. We was on a two-game losing streak. You want to be able to split when you have home and away games, and we needed this game. And I thought the player of the game was Aiden Shaw, man. To be able to get a DNP, come in his first half and hit those two threes, that took a lot of confidence, and I'm proud of them.
Tell us about the resilience of your ball club. I mean, Arkansas put their best foot forward. There was a stretch where they had a little bit of control. But talk about your ball club. And
we didn't blink, and that's our philosophy. Don't blink. Our guys were able to stay focused on the game, and I truly believe we were down 7-6 points, and our guys just kept encouraging each other. It's usually the words that are being said, and our guys said some powerful words. And I credit Isaiah Mosley as well, being prepared to play. And I'm just excited, man. It's a win for our fans. Missouri fans showed out.
We see a Golston three right here. How big was he tonight for you?
Big time. Yeah. He was vocal in the huddle, and I knew he had ice water in his veins, right? He was ending up. That and one was crucial.
Yeah.
But that's his shot.
So let's talk about what you've built with this atmosphere here at Mizzou Arena.
Oh, man, was it awesome.
You credit, I built, we built. We built, and I say that as former players, the entire city, they're sacrificing their time to be here, and that's most important. When you're at the infant stages of building a program, it's very important that you have the consistency, and our crowd has been consistent.
Hey, before we get out of here, I don't want to make it the whole story, but obviously seeing Isaiah Mosley on the floor tonight, hadn't seen him in a while.
Yep.
What prompted him, and what did you think of his performance?
He had a great 2 weeks of basketball, and I thought his teammates encouraged him. they were able to get him going, and he got us going in that first half when we couldn't manufacture offense. Ultimately, I think his teammates deserve the credit, but also himself.
All right, you said to us before we left the arena today at shoot-arounds, you said, hope to give you guys a good one. Well, I think you overachieved in that, Coach. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Big
M-I-Z.
Win.
Big win for Mizzou. So there's some college basketball for you after Mizzou erases the 10-point deficit with just under 5 minutes left in the game, and they get a very big win over the number 25 team in the nation, Arkansas. Oh, but by the way, they're, what are they now, 1-4 or 1-5?
1-5. 5 now. Conference, because Missouri's 3-2 now.
Ew. But they showed, like, the last 2 years, they've gotten off to bad starts in the conference.
Really?
2 years ago, they won their final 11 games, and then last year, they won their last 14 of 15. So they started off really poorly in conference the last 2 years and then just caught fire. But I don't know. I don't know if they're going to do it again this year, but they didn't catch fire last night. Mizzou wins 79-76. Back after this with Adam Kaplan on WHB.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Always. Don't ever lose that. Sometimes I've heard this in the past, and I think this kind of relates to it, but there's reckless and there's ruthless. And I think those two are different, and having the balance between knowing what's reckless, we don't want reckless. But ruthless is a good word of being able to rip your heart out, go downfield, and you're going to give it to us, we'll take it. If not, then we'll be smart.
He won't be reckless, but we want him to be ruthless, especially now during the postseason. Let's hear from our NFL insider, Adam Kaplan. You can follow him on Twitter, KaplanNFL. Adam, all we want Patrick Mahomes to do this postseason is to rip people's hearts out. Is that too much to ask?
I'm sure he will try to. You know what's interesting about the Week 10 game when the Chiefs won rather easily, 27-17. They got up 20-0. When you look at turnover ratio, the Chiefs actually turn it over a bunch. Actually, they lost the turnover battle 3-0. But they won easily. And if you look at the Jaguars game last week, they lose it 5-0, but come from behind a 27-point deficit and win. This league could be strange sometimes when you look at turnover margin.
To me, you make a great point about that. You know, they had some special teams issues. That was a game that Juju Smith-Schuster got knocked out of. You mentioned losing the turnover battle. And still, they outgained Jacksonville by almost 200. Patrick Mahomes, except for one interception, was great. They ran the ball for over 150 yards and over 5.5 yards a carry. All the elements were there to win by 3 touchdowns, but they gave the ball away. Maybe this is just me being too biased in favor of the Chiefs, but if they take care of the football and don't make big mistakes, I mean, they win. They cover. They take care of Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, in fact, I think they didn't cover in that game against Jacksonville. I'm pretty certain of it because I remember thinking the game was going to be a blowout, and it sure looked like it, but as you mentioned, the turnovers. A couple other things about their first matchup. Mecole Hardman didn't play, and he's not expected to play in this game with the pelvis injury. This was the second game for Kadarius Toney after the trade, and it was his first touchdown with the Chiefs. In fact, you could kind of see how Andy Reid wanted to use him as a gadget player, as a running back, on reverses and jet motion, and also as a receiver in the slot and a little bit on the outside. And the thing that you do when you play the Jaguars is you spread them out. They're not very good in the secondary. The front seven's pretty good, particularly their pass rush up front, but they're not very good at corner, and that's what you do is you come out throwing, and I expect the Chiefs to do it like they always do, heavy and often.
Nate Bucati.
All right, Adam, so when it comes to that that secondary of the Jags, they put a couple of hits on the Chiefs last time around Cisco that knocked guys out of the game, didn't get flagged for targeting at all, and I'm just wondering how much of Jacksonville's game plan might be to try to kind of bully the Chiefs a little bit, get physical, and is that something you expect to see from them in this game?
Yeah, and Jenkins, the former Charger safety who's actually known for his physical play, Cisco was a guy coming out of Syracuse. He was big with interceptions. He has not had that kind of luck at the NFL level. They're actually pretty good at safety, but what you do is, because they just don't have the depth at corner, teams spread them out, and they really struggle. And we really did see that last week with the Chargers until they kind of choked. But, yeah, that's what you do here. And Matt Nagy, you could hear him on that sound clip. You kind of know what's coming. You just spread them out, and that's what I expect to happen. This is also, by the way, this is around the area in the first matchup in Week 10 where Pacheco started taking over as the primary running back in terms of running the football. And then this is also around the time when McKinnon started being a factor in the pass game. And you've seen that. McKinnon's been absolute money inside the 10-yard line in the pass game.
So I wanted to ask you this question before we get your predictions and what you think is going to happen in these other games. We had a spirited discussion yesterday about the head coaches that are left now, the eight head coaches in the divisional round, and how we would rank them. And so, you know, we all had Andy Reid number one, and then we were all over the map as far as number two and number three. And I just thought when we started the conversation, Doug Peterson wasn't being given enough credit. And I almost feel like, hell, you could make a case for him being number two. He's got a Super Bowl championship. He made Carson Wentz look like an MVP. He won a championship with Nick Foles, and now he's turned Jacksonville around in a year. But, you know, Sean McDermott, Mike McCarthy doesn't get enough credit, and that all the hell he has to put up with, and he's won a Super Bowl. You know, you've got a couple of Coach of the Year candidates, and Nick Sirianni and Brian Daboll. Who after Andy Reid, what would your pecking order be as far as ranking these head coaches?
I would probably have to say, after Andy Reid, I'm going to put Kyle Shanahan right up there.
Yep.
What he's done with Brock Purdy is ridiculous. I mean, because remember, Shanahan is not only the head coach, he calls the offense. He doesn't really have an offensive coordinator. He's done a phenomenal job. I got to put him right up there. Sean McDermott has done a phenomenal job as well. He's right up there. The guy who surprised me, I didn't think much of him particularly early in his career as head coach, but Zach Taylor, I got to give this guy credit. He's been a much better head coach than I anticipated. His brother Press, by the way, is the offensive coordinator for the Jaguars. He's Doug Peterson's guy. In fact, one of the reasons why Doug Peterson got fired was part of the Eagles were wanted to have the Press Taylor reassign on his coaching staff, and Doug, part of the reasons why he got fired is he was not willing to do that. He's done a great job, though. Doug Peterson, we should also, as you said, not only did he win a Super Bowl with the Eagles, remember what happened when Carson Wentz tore his ACL. They got to the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, which is sort of incredible considering when you look at Nick's career.
So when you look at this matchup with Doug Peterson having so much knowledge of Andy Reid, but you know he wasn't there when Patrick Mahomes got here, how do you look at this matchup between the teacher and the pupil on Saturday at Arrowhead?
They both have a similar philosophy. When you look at Trevor Lawrence, he's putting the ball up about 36 times per game. They've really put it on him in the second half of the season. His pass rate numbers are up. Now they've had to do it because they're not good enough defensively. To play an Andy Reid team, you got to be really good in the secondary just to compete, and they're really not. That to me is where you separate the two teams, and they're both teams will come out throwing. I don't think there's any question about it. Now, the one thing is the weather Saturday afternoon does look a little bit iffy for at least mid-30s. No, wind won't be a factor, but it looks like we might have probably looks a little bit like rain right now. So we have to keep an eye on that. But you know, overall, the 8.5-point spread, I think it's very fair. I probably would have it even a little bit higher. The over-under 52.5, I think that's very, very reasonable. Because I see the Chiefs definitely scoring high 20s, low 30s, unless weather's a major factor.
Okay, Adam, let's talk about some of the rest of the weekend. Obviously, all eyes are going to be on that Bengals-Bills game if the Chiefs, in fact, can take care of business. As we'll find out, if the Chiefs are going to Atlanta to play the Bills or they're playing at home against Cincinnati, the Bengals without three of their starting offensive linemen, how big of a storyline is that coming into this game?
It's not a big deal at right tackle. Hakeem Adeniji, who actually started guard last year, starting at right tackle, he's okay. It's not going to have Jota Williams or left tackle. Not going to have Alex Kappa. He's got a bad ankle injury, one of the starting guards. That does worry me. And you add up three offensive line changes on the road in a hostile environment. That does worry me a little bit. When you look at the Bills game, boy, they got up big last week. They're up 17. Looked like they were going to just destroy the Dolphins, but turnovers, missed opportunities that kept the Dolphins in it with Skylar Thompson of all quarterbacks. They hung in there, and then you look at the Bengals situation. Look, they're really well coached. I like the way that they played against Baltimore. Boy, Snoop Huntley played great football, but he had not played really well. In fact, that was his best game of the season, filling in for Lamar Jackson. They did enough to win the game, and Joe Burrow didn't have to do very much. In fact, they sort of had a conservative game plan. Part of it's because Baltimore got healthy on defense. They had some injuries coming into the game, but their key players played. They found a way to win the game. I know it was obvious because Huntley fumbled. You know, by the way, Bill Belichick teaches his players they are not allowed to reach over the goal line like that. They're not allowed to dive or reach over. And that's something I think the Ravens will learn from. And I, when you look at the Bengals, I expect them to bounce back from that game. I didn't think they played particularly well. They probably should have lost it. But in the end, now we're gonna see the complete Buffalo-Cincy game, and I expect this to be sort of the game of the week. I would agree with your assessment.
So what's your prediction?
On that one, I'm going to pick the Bills because they're the healthiest team of the two. In fact, they should have just about everyone. When you look at it, they're not going to have Micah Hyde coming back from his neck surgery, but if they get to the Super Bowl, there's a very good chance he'd be able to play.
Let's hope they do not get to the Super Bowl, Adam Kaplan.
That's right.
Okay, what about Philadelphia? They are the number one seed in the NFC, and they get a divisional opponent in the New York Giants. Any reason for the Eagles to Eagles fans to be worried about the Giants coming to town?
No, the Week 18 game, the Giants treat it like a preseason game, like the first one. They only played a couple starters. They had to play a couple because you can't bench everyone. And the Eagles needed that game to clinch home field, and they got it. But they didn't have a lot of energy for that game. The fans were not really into it. They'll be all lathered up for this one in Philly Saturday night. The weather's going to be fine in the high 30s, no wind. This should be a fairly high-scoring game. The thing that's interesting, when you look at Brian Daboll, a former Chiefs assistant, by the way, the head coach of the Giants, he's put a lot on Daniel Jones. They're letting him throw the ball more. He's been very successful. Now, two of those games were against the Vikings, but he's really come through. He's playing good football. He's not turning over like he'd done in the past. I give them a puncher's chance, but the problem is, as we saw in Week 14, the Eagles absolutely crushed them. In fact, their biggest scoring output of the year, 48 points. In fact, the crazy thing about that game was is they benched the starters in the fourth quarter. They might have scored 60 in that game if the Giants would have made it close.
All right, what about the other game in the NFC, the Cowboys and the 49ers?
Should be a fun one in Santa Clara. Yeah, Brock Purdy has just been one of the most remarkable stories of my 21 years of covering this business. I just can't believe how well he's playing. Dak Prescott had his best game of the season. He was incredible against the Bucs on Monday night. They got to travel a little bit on a short week here. By the way, they had three offensive line changes last week, and it didn't really seem to matter against a regression of a Bucs defense. This will be a fun football game. I'm going to pick the Niners. Until somebody could pressure Brock Purdy, they're just not going to lose.
We have Adam Kaplan on the line. Okay, let's get back to where we started. Chiefs and the Jags. What's the line at now? 8.5, Marco? You said that that's about right, but and it sounds like maybe you were leaning towards a Chiefs cover. How do you think this game plays out on Saturday at Arrowhead Stadium?
Yeah, it's 8.5 and 52.5. I'm going to pick the Chiefs to win this one 33-20, which would go over by half a point. Now, here's the thing. It might not if the weather's a factor. I know it won't be windy, but we're too far out to know exactly whether the precipitation is going to be a major factor. I don't know yet because we're not close enough to that game. So we'll have to keep an eye on it still over 2 days to see what the weather's going to look like. But the good thing is, though, with Pacheco being a factor, he could handle volume carries. That's a major factor when weather becomes an issue.
Nate Ducati, any final thoughts for Adam Kaplan?
We'll ask the question again. You think Eric Bieniemy is going to get any job offers this time around?
Well, see, the interesting situation is with the Panthers. In my reporting on that one, they really like Ben Johnson. They had not interviewed him yet. They only had a phone conversation, and he decided that he wasn't ready. That's actually true. I know sometimes agents put stuff out about when a guy's not going to get a job to say, oh, well, you decided you want to interview for it. That's not the case here. It's legit. He didn't think he was ready, and he decided not to do it. As far as Bieniemy, not hearing a lot of juice for him to get a head coaching job this time around. And I think part of it, I've talked about this on your show over the years, the issue there is because the Chiefs are so good, you know, you need to get the full Eric Bieniemy in person because he's got tremendous energy and passion for the job. That definitely plays a part in him why he's not getting a head coaching job, because by the time he could potentially interview in person, these teams seem to have made up their mind.
Nate's sitting in Denver right now, so we'll just close with this and remind people that Denver not in the postseason again. Who will be the next head coach of the Denver Broncos?
Look, Sean Payton, he interviewed for it. I know they were pretty impressed by him. They're looking at 4 to 5 other potential real candidates for that job. This ownership in Denver is willing to spend the money, and they'll spend the draft pick. It's going to be at least a first-rounder if you want to acquire him, Sean Payton, because he's still under contract with the Saints. This one's going to be fascinating because it's all about getting Russell Wilson back to where he once was. The fact that he interviewed for it, Sean Payton would tell me that he has high interest in the job. And really, what the Panthers, talking to a lot of people, the Panthers probably got the best head coaching opening because they've got a lot of players signed to an extension. They've got a great defense. The issue there is they just don't have the quarterback. Where the Broncos have the defense, they have a quarterback, but they have a quarterback who's in a major regression. And that's the issue with that job. And I've talked to some people that were not kind of interested in it. I find it interesting that Sean Payton actually has a high regard for that job.
Adam Kaplan has been our guest. One final one I wanted to ask you, because we're having this debate also this week, and I wanted to ask you about this before we let you go. Who's the better quarterback, Josh Allen or Joe Burrow?
They're kind of similar, kind of different. They both, well, Josh Allen could run. I would say Burrow's a little bit more structured. I would say if you had to say who's the guy that you trust a little bit more, probably would be Burrow. But Josh Allen's the more talented one. What I've learned about this business is it's not so much who's talented enough, who's the most talented, who could execute the plays when you need them to. And to me, I have a little bit slight, I would just say a little, little narrower trust Joe Burrow over Allen, but they're two great quarterbacks.
Can't wait to watch that matchup, and hopefully we'll all be watching after the Chiefs advance to the AFC Championship game.
That's right.
We'll talk about that with you next week. Adam, thank you so much for the time.
Okay, guys, thank you.
That's Adam Kaplan. He's very, very good. One of the best in the business. What do you think about that, Nate?
I like that he's picking the Chiefs to win and cover.
He said 33-20, partner.
I
saw a video of the NFL announcing their international games, and so if people have missed this already, the Chiefs will be hosting a game in Germany next week, and then the Chiefs sent out this beautiful artist, work of art of looks like a beautiful drawing of some of the different players' faces that included a glorious rendering of Creed Humphrey that I have enlarged and retweeted. That pleases me. This is a work of art that could be hung over your fireplace, I think. I'd like you to look at that. And also, I found a video of, they brought in a celebrity to announce all of the games in England, Harry Kane. And so, and then right afterwards, he missed a penalty kick, and then everyone got mad.
Dirty Spurs.
That's soccer talk. You know that. Let's take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
It was a long day yesterday, but you know I'm hanging in there. Had a great remote at Hy-Vee with the Hy-Vee Supercart and gave away an autographed football signed by Trent McDuffie. Gave away a Juju Smith-Schuster football. That was awesome. Had a good physical therapy appointment for my back. Had a good scrimmage with the girls' basketball team last night. Watched Mizzou come back from a 10-point deficit and beat Arkansas by 3 last night. Now, that was what I say was a good Wednesday, Gary Lezak.
That means you need a little downtime. You are like on.
I'm on it, baby. Let's go.
My gosh. Are you going to get any downtime?
I'm taking Selena to the St. Pius freshman girls, JV girls, and varsity girls basketball team, because that's who she's going to be playing for next year, and we want to watch. So how about that?
Excellent. So Marco was telling me the NFL insider was talking about how no one knows what the weather's going to be like for Saturday.
Adam Kaplan.
Adam, yeah. Because if you use the other sources, National Weather Service, et cetera, like San Francisco, Seattle, the forecast was rain for that whole game. No, it was nice. Okay, it was cloudy with drizzle. The weather was pretty good. Okay, but that's what we do with the LRC. We provide the difference in weather prediction. All right? Now, I'm going to make a bold prediction right now, and it is not good news.
Nope.
I'm going to make a bold prediction. This storm we are having, with a little snow today and the rain yesterday, pretty significant storm, severe thunderstorms to our southeast and a snowstorm to our north by one state. We just missed it. Right? This storm that we just had, the weather pattern is cycling, and it's close to this is top secret, about 7 week cycle, 49, 50, 51 days. Okay? What is 100 days from now? The NFL draft.
The NFL draft.
So this part of the pattern that just produced severe thunderstorms to our southeast, no to our north, the storm, the part of the pattern that produced that, will return. I tell Adam Kaplan this, 100% chance that the storm will be there. Now, what does it mean for Kansas City and the NFL draft, April 28th, April 29th, April 30th? What does it mean? All right, it means there's going to be a significant chance of thunderstorms, possibly severe weather. Hopefully, it's a river of air above us, so hopefully it oscillates a little bit and comes a day before the draft, or it might come a day after the draft. But I know that week there's going to be a storm. All right, so there's a long range forecast.
Why won't you give the forecast for the game that's taking place in 2 days?
Because I just put a bold forecast out there.
Okay.
So don't forget that week, 100 days from now, we'll all forget. Adam Kaplan.
I'm not going to forget now.
Okay.
Did you forget there's a game on Saturday though?
Yeah, no, I did not.
Okay.
So let's get to it. Right. If you would give me 20 minutes,
fine. I just want to know. I feel like people are more concerned about this game.
He just needs 20 minutes to get to it.
This game's coming up.
Yeah, it doesn't. I can do it in 2 minutes. So here's what's happening.
Yeah, so can I, but you know what? That's none of your business.
Marco, where's the laugh track? Come on.
You are the laugh track. Come on now. I got Chiefs fans out there trying to figure out what kind of outfit do they wear to Arrowhead on Saturday.
It'll be about 34 degrees, 33 degrees, cloudy, with some rain showers changing to some snow showers. There could be some accumulation during the game, all right? You know, 1-2 inches of snow is a possibility Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. The timing is still somewhat in question. It's something we will get a little bit closer to in the next couple of days, but there is a system, and yes, the LRC has it pegged for that day. So we'll have a chance of rain and snow, maybe some accumulation. Advantage, Kansas City Chiefs.
Uh-huh. I knew it.
All right, so we'll get more details as we get closer. Let me look at the latest data that just came in. It's actually overnight data. The European model.
They FedEx that?
And it has, see here, it comes. It starts snowing at 3:29, 1 minute before kickoff.
You're so full of it.
No, I'm looking at it.
It doesn't say it's snowing at 3:29, 1 minute before kickoff.
It's my interpretation of what I'm looking at. All right, this is what you asked for. This is what you pay for.
Is this what I pay for?
3:29. Maybe 3:30.
Give me my money's worth. Thank you.
Right at kickoff, it starts snowing, and then it snows during the game on the European model. The American model.
Good.
American model has it starting at 2:30.
All right. So roughly right around the time the segment will be over.
Yeah. Yeah. This segment will be over at 2:30.
Thank you, Gary.
I don't get to keep going, Marco. No. Come on.
Marco's getting mad at me now, and I'm not doing nothing. Thank you, Gary.
Got a forecast for Wichita, too, so if you want me to.
Just say something quickly. Go, Wichita.
It's going to be cloudy.
They don't even join us till 8:04. This is a waste of time, Gary.
That's Gary Lezak. Marco's pissed. Back after this on WHB.